No, they haven't turned it on yet.
Hello, hello.
Well, gee, Grace Poletti told me I should...
No, I heard the mic.
I heard the mic, yeah. Is the my life.
Hey, Bob, can you hear this back there?
Is the mic on?
We got it back here.
Yeah. Okay, but it's not projecting out? Testing, testing.
Testing, testing.
No, they're not on.
No.
Not yet. All right.
This is...
Testing, it's going testing. Through the TV, but you guys. Yeah, see if you can do that. All right, us.
I teach in Maple High School in Waffle.
And what do you teach?
I teach high school, 912 alternative ed continuation high school.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. Testing, testing. Not yet.
This is what we don't want to hear, is where is the button?
Alright. Testing.
Down a little.
All right. Hello, Morro Bay, and sorry about the delay without sound. In any case, welcome to the Thursday, March 20th edition of the Public Works Advisory Board. Please, what did I say? February 20th, March 2014 edition of Public Works. Please advise we have everybody here in attendance tonight. And with that, so the quorum is established and call to order. So the meeting will start. And before we start, could we have a moment of silence, please? Okay. With that, and do we have any announcements that would anybody like to make?
No.
No? Okay. Seeing none, no announcements, we're going to move on. And then we go to our public comment period. So please, if you have a public comment, step up to the mic, state your name, and here we go.
My name is Bob Keller. I'm a Morro Bay resident, chair, members of the board. This is concerning the area of Main Street, Ratcliffe, and Littlemore Creek Road. Main Street is the main artery from Morro Bay, from the north of Morro Bay and Highway 141 to downtown and the Embarcadero. It's like a main stream, a lot of traffic. We have a lot of traffic in this area, autos, motorhomes, recreation vehicles, farming trucks, and equipment. We also have bicyclists, include motorized bikes, and they're young and old, skateboarders, skaters, pedestrians, children, and dogs walking their owners. I have some options that are to be considered because I'm representing like the Harbor Track. Stop signs could be used, needed, yield signs to protect pedestrians, and we have a big cross section there with cars going always all over the way, all over the place. Maybe have a maximum speed sign, radar enforced. I was going through Cuesta College the other day, and they have speed bumps going through their area, and it really slows down traffic. Anyway, we have a very busy intersection in this area with Highway 1, Main Street, Ratcliffe, and Littlemore Creek Road. That's a lot of traffic, especially during the holidays and during the high tourist season. This is what I hear from my Morro Bay citizens up in the Harbor Track. Just hope and pray we don't have a fatality in this area, because if it happens, who will have the liability? Caltrans or the city? Or maybe both? Best would be prevention. We badly need a long-awaited traffic control program for this intersection. I did notice, though, when I was walking today, that they cut back the brushes and removed the 35-mile sign that was right in that area. I know a bike park is planned for this area, and I'm not against the bike park. In fact, I'm for it. just want to be safe for all citizens in that area. And I'm going to be closing pretty soon, but I want to make a comment. I did notice there was a cop car parked in the PG&E area today. And when I was walking, I stopped to look, and I saw a lot of the cars that were hitting their brake lights. And they saw the cop car, and, man, they just hit the brake lights real fast. So that might be an idea of a fake cop car there. So anyway, that's my main thing, is we have a lot of citizens up there that already want this something done about this, because before we have a bad accident. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. That's actually a really important part of what's going on Main Street. And as someone who used to live up there when I was a kid, I understand. So thank you.
Good evening, Chairman and Board. I'm Nancy Bast. I live up on Fairview. And I wanted to follow up on several issues that I wrote to the board about. One is about the King Street. I thanked everyone appropriately for repaving it. It was well overdue, and it's really nice now. But there is a problem, always has been a problem, with speeding there. And the Y section where Fairview takes off uphill, oftentimes there's people accelerate there, and there's children right up kind of at that little curve. And I thought maybe that painting a big 25 miles an hour on there. I also wrote about a possibility of a stop sign at the end of the east end of Pacific, where it dead ends at King's. Because it dead ends there, people coming from town, it's pretty heavily traveled, and so is King's in order to get up into the heights. The people that come east on Pacific, sometimes they don't stop when they get to King's. They just do a right turn without stopping, sometimes a left turn, but more likely a right turn. So please consider a stop sign on Pacific there. I think it would be more appropriate on Pacific than King's. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was the possibility of making the rightmost lane at the roundabout where you come off the freeway. Both of those lanes go around the roundabout and immediately merge into one lane just past the roundabout. With cars turning into the mobile station, it gets kind of confusing in rush hour. And so it seems reasonable to me to make that rightmost lane going west off the freeway to make it a right turn only lane onto Quintana, northbound. Pretty much when there's work traffic coming off the freeway, they're coming way over the 20 miles an hour sign that's posted way back by the bridge. And so it really gets confusing if you're trying to turn onto the roundabout at from Quintana going east. And both those lanes, we don't know whether they're going to turn right or go straight or what. So if you'd consider a right turn lane only there, I think a lot of us would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Those are really good suggestions. Appreciate it. Do we have any other further public comment? No? Okay. Moving on. We move on to our item A, consent calendar. First item, instead of just accepting these en masse, I'd like to go one by one.
Oh.
So A1 is the approval of minutes of December 19th, 2013 meeting. Did anybody have any comments first about these minutes?
No.
Do we have a motion to approve?
I'll move to approve A1 on the consent calendar as stated.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
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 The motion carries unanimously.
Number two, Rob, I'm sorry. I guess when I saw that we were going to get a verbal report, we just had to break this apart just to hear you. So
sure.
A2, can we start on your director's report?
Yeah, and I apologize for not getting this director's report out to you with the packet. I'm just going to go down through the list of typical items that we have on this. Transit, no change in the transit issues, both with trolley and with Morro Bay Transit. We will be bringing the trolley report to City Council this spring, giving them the information of trolley ridership. So we're still compiling that data. The wastewater treatment plant and a new water reclamation facility. We have an item going to City Council next Tuesday on the development of the new water reclamation facility. I believe the agenda just went out a few minutes ago. One of the items for discussion is Council's adoption of a resolution setting a goal of a five-year time frame to develop and construct a new water reclamation facility, a little status update on where we are on the process, and talk about us hiring or amending the contract with Rickenbach and Nenley to do some follow-up work and get moving a little bit quicker on the project. For the major maintenance and repair portion of the project, the city and Cayuga Sanitary District awarded contracts for the purchase of new headworks equipment, awarded a contract for the sandblasting and recoating of one of the digesters and future projects, pavement management plan, streets and sidewalks. The 2013 rehab project is complete and will be accepted by City Council also next Tuesday. We're currently working on a plan for some rehab work on that section of South Bay Boulevard between kind of where it turns off to Teresa Drive and the Quintana intersection there. Has needed some major help there. That's probably the most difficult section to work on due to the amount of traffic that goes over that. But we did receive some support from our local funding partner, SLOCOG, with about $300,000 to do some work there. And we're also working on developing the 2014 projects. The Urban Forestry Management Plan, which this board has reviewed in the past, will be going to City Council on March 11th. And just continue to plug, continue to want information on various projects, the boards and commissions agendas to sign up on Notify Me, and continue to use our Let Us Know notification process for issues that you see out in the city. So with that, that completes my director's report, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay, so we open it up down here. We have any questions for the director's report?
I have no questions.
No.
Down here? Oh, go ahead.
The only question I had was, did the forest management plan go to the Planning Commission also?
Yes, it did. Sorry about
okay.
that. Yes,
okay.
And they passed it on to City Council.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. I had a quick question. In your director's report, you talked about a five-year time frame for the design construction of the... As it stands right now, Rickenbach went through their report and made the recommendations, correct? You haven't moved on yet to the design or, you know.
No. Where we?
I guess the question I was going to ask real quick, Rob, is 5 years feasible? It sounds to me a little tight based on where you stand today. And don't get me wrong, it can happen, but I realize what the permitting process is that the city has to go through, especially with Coastal Commission at all. Does that sound reasonable? doable, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
I think it's doable, but it's a very aggressive schedule, which will require us to, I think at the end of the day, we'll be spending about the same amount of money, but we're, it will require a lot of cash flow up front in the process to have kind of some planning and preliminary design going on simultaneously that you might normally do sequentially in a project. So there will be a higher need for cash flow in the very front end of the project. And we're looking at alternative delivery options, design build.
Is there a benefit to trying to get it within this five-year window? I mean,
well,
funding-wise or you know, other monies going on that, that this 5 year is
the time value of money that relates. So the longer it takes, the more expensive it's going to be in the long run.
Okay.
And then also we continue to spend money on our existing wastewater plant with the major maintenance and repair plan. And I think the sooner that we can complete our expenditures there, we'll save that amount of money also.
Oh, okay.
Although we still will have to maintain that plant till we have a new one operating. We can't just stop saying we're done with it, and because the potential for spending money on it if we don't do the repairs with the fines would probably shadow the amount that we're spending on repair work.
And I assume it's the city's responsibility to remove the facilities
yes.
there, the existing. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Not like the power plant where we can
right.
just let it sit there for years.
I have one question, Robin, is about that work down on South Bay. Is there a time frame for that work on the, right near Teresa Drive? And I'm thinking, are you talking underneath the overpass?
Underneath the overpass there. I don't think we have a schedule yet. We have a consultant working at evaluating the pavement, what we can do there that's cost-effective. And because $300,000 may sound like a lot of money, but when you buy asphalt, it's not a huge amount of money.
Okay.
We still don't have clarity from TAMSE on when that funding is going to be available either.
No, I guess part of my thinking was I know we're at Bayshore when they just upgraded their road. Is that kind of where we would go from? Is that where you're thinking is from where they just upgraded or they just repaved it down South Bay through that one troubled section?
Yeah.
Okay. Down to Quintana?
Roughly Quintana to Bayshore,
their entrance.
To Teresa, that private drive that
yeah.
goes up from,
okay. No problem.
Up the hill there from the interchange.
You have a second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. A2 is accepted. And we move on to A3. So with that in mind, because, Rob, that was kind of a group email with Red Davis, and he said he'd like to have a little bit more time at the April BWAB meeting?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll just have that on the agenda at a future meeting?
As a discussion item rather
as a
than
discussion.
As a consent
yes,
item.
Because I think he wanted to come and go item by item on things that are concerned.
Exactly.
Okay.
We'll probably work, not probably, we will work with Mr. Davis and hopefully come up with potential solutions that we can talk about at the meeting too for those items.
No, totally. The need list that he presented was I found kind of interesting. So I think I'd love to spend more time than just doing a consent item. So do we need to have a motion to move that also?
Yes.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion?
I move that we move the item A3 to our next meeting.
We have a second.
I second.
Do we have everybody in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay. For those at home, the bike committee is going to get some time in April. In April. It should be very interesting. Okay. So we move on to Section B, old business, and we have none. So we're on to C, new business. And our first item is C1, stormwater management plan, management post-construction and low-impact development requirements. The recommendation is to receive report and provide comments as necessary.
Yeah, I guess Barry Rands, associate engineer with the City of Morro Bay, will be presenting this item, and this is a result of the new permit that the city has with the state regarding stormwater discharge. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and Board, pleased to present for your information and for the public information an overview of the new requirements and standards for stormwater management in the city of Morro Bay. And these standards aren't really that new. They're more a fine-tuning of existing standards that we've had for quite a while. We had a July 2011 supplement that had very similar standards, but these standards are more fine-tuned and they're more specific to size, type, and location of projects. So the new manual there is called our Stormwater Management Guidance Manual for Low Impact Development Post-Construction Requirements, and it comes after many years of study and discussions between the Water Quality Control Board and the municipalities' agencies that implement these new standards. The resolution was adopted, I believe, back last year by the board, and we are mandated to implement those standards by March 6th, so that's coming up here just in a few weeks. And these standards do apply to more than just Morro Bay or San Luis Obispo County. It's the entire Central Coast, every county from Santa Barbara up to Santa Cruz. And the goal of these of this program or these new standards is to restore watersheds to conditions with a healthy balance of infiltration, evapotranspiration, and runoff through the promotion of low-impact development, or LID. And the basis for these standards is an attempt to mimic what we get during for a storm in natural conditions. And in natural conditions, here's a on the screen, we have a picture of what the Central Coast looks like in an undeveloped state, 40% evapotranspiration, 50% infiltration, and only 10% runoff. With development, a lot of impervious surfaces are created. Runoff is there's a big change to runoff. We get 30% or three times the amount of runoff when we have when we have impervious surfaces developed without any mitigating factors. So these standards are intended to provide mitigation for the impervious surfaces that are created in development. So what will these new stormwater requirements? Anything under 2,500 square feet of impervious surface, so a lot of our single-family homes that aren't real large would be exempt from these requirements. But anything over that creates or replaces 2,500 square feet of impervious surface would be subject to these requirements. And for the first level, the first tier would be 2,500 to 5,000 square feet, and the performance requirements would be basic site planning, trying to fit the development into the landscape to provide or to have the least amount of impact, and also implementation of one LID measure, such as those pictured here, rainwater barrels or pervious pavement, that sort of thing. So those would apply to all commercial developments in that range of square footage. And for single-family residents, that range goes right on up to 15,000 square feet, as you can see in the asterisk note at the bottom. The next level of requirements is the 5,000 to 15,000 square foot range, and that applies to commercial developments. And we already have implemented, or we have required some developments here in Morro Bay to to follow those standards. And this picture here on the right shows what it looks like there at the Taco Bell development, which was remodeled, I think, about 3 years ago. And so they have the water quality treatment is accomplished by having the runoff from the parking lot go through these swales in the along the edges of the parking lot before it goes into the street. And then I said location also is a factor in determining requirements. And one of the outcomes of the studies that they did over these last couple of years was they determined throughout the Central Coast areas where infiltration can be very effectively enhanced if you do infiltration in certain areas. And so for example, Morro Bay, we have the bluer areas, those are called water management or watershed management zone 1, and those are the areas that kind of follow the creeks or the area next to the creeks. And so those are the areas where we want to encourage infiltration to the maximum. And most of Morro Bay is zone 4, and those areas don't have as much infiltration or don't overlie groundwater basins, and so they wouldn't have as stringent requirements for infiltration. So then we get into performance requirement number 3. This level requires runoff retention for development projects that have 15 to 22,500 square feet. And those, depending on where you are in the watershed, you would have to retain up to 1.6 inches of runoff. Now, retention of runoff means you don't even let it get out into the street at all. It infiltrates into the soil. And so that's going to be real beneficial for our watershed, especially with the drought we're having. So if we can infiltrate as much as possible, this is going to be a good thing for Morro Bay and the Central Coast in general. And then once you get to very large developments, major subdivisions and commercial developments, then there's also detention requirements. And detention as opposed to retention. Detention is just detaining the water temporarily on the site and allowing it to meter off or to flow incrementally into the storm drain system through an orifice, so it ponds up before it goes out into our storm drain system or off back into the creeks. And then also wanted to point out that the city has also detention requirements, and we've incorporated this into the new manual, and we've called this Performance Requirement 5. And that applies to all developments, and it always has applied for all developments that have more than 2,500 square feet of impervious surfaces. And that does include single-family residences. And those can be done like the Taco Bell project has a real simple one, and it's just the way that they've curbed up their 4 single-family residents, the smaller developments that are most common here in Morro Bay, and we call that the easy manual, like our tax forms. And then the main manual is fairly large. I think you have copies of both of those. They go into great detail for the larger developments. And then just briefly on the permit process, doesn't really change that much, although developers will have to take into account, they have to determine their performance requirements up front before they, during the application for their planning permit. And then we review make sure that they have room on their site for whatever stormwater facilities are required. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay. Do we have any questions?
I do.
How about if we start down on this end? Marlis?
I'm just wondering how enforcement is handled. how do you enforce the fact that these standards are in fact followed? Are there inspections after the fact?
Well, we do it at several levels. So we would, first of all, we wouldn't issue a permit unless they comply on the design stage. And then there's two levels of inspection. There's inspection at the basic layout phase to make sure that everything is, especially because, as you can imagine, with water flowing, elevations have to be checked to make sure things are watered. They don't try to push water uphill. And then there will be also a final inspection when everything is complete. And then we also have incorporated a requirement where all stormwater facilities have to have a maintenance manual, which is recorded as part of the deed to the property. The facility will be go along with the sale of the property, and the homeowner will also be required to do an annual report on the performance of the facility.
Okay, thank you.
To add on to hers a little bit, Barry, I know at the time you build it, you're looking at, and when they get a final on their building permit, you also look at it. But that compliance feature you're talking about with the annual report still requires city staff's time either to review the report or actually the person who doesn't turn in the report, and you're out there having to hunt them down. And I know for the city it's been kind of a tough go trying to, you know, comply with things. You usually act on more of a complaint basis kind of thing here in this town. Have you guys given any thought as to how you plan to implement that portion of the, you know, meeting those compliance features? Because I doubt, quite honestly, I honestly can believe 2 years down the road, nobody turns in a report and you're trying to figure out how many of these things you have out there in town. And I see it as a big workload on a short-term basis. Once a year for somebody to have to go through, is it going to be zoning enforcement? I didn't know how you plan to basically enforce that feature.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have options with the enforcement and the tracking of these requirements. So this has been a regulation passed by the state, and we all know heard unfunded mandates. So this is perhaps another example of that. So the city may have to increase staffing to cover this. We do have authorization for a fairly low-level engineering tech position to basically help out with the stormwater program. We would use a position like that to assist with the monitoring of these stormwater plans. And, you know, the first year it may not be a problem, but I can see a few years down the road when we have, you know, a few dozen of these to work. Hopefully we have a few dozen of these to, and building continues in Morro Bay so that, but we will have to develop a program. It'll be much probably like our business license program where we, if we don't get the report, we send you out a reminder letter that please submit it. And then, you know, the tone of the letter changes as it gets later. And ultimately, we'll use the administrative citation program that's afforded us through the Muni Code to get code compliance. So it's not cost recovery.
Exempts them in the process. And I just like to, I don't think it was, it's probably more by omission than anything else that it's not written into the actual guidelines. Does the city have the ability to kind of add verbiage to this thing, or do you have to buy onto it exactly as it was written?
Well, this is our own city manual, although we're trying to get all the agencies to have their guidance look kind of similar.
Consistent, yeah.
Consistent.
Yeah.
I believe that we could, add language regarding rooftops, also a roof re-roof projects. My view is a re-roof is a maintenance item, not a redevelopment item. Okay. So I don't know that we had to, but in order to clarify things, I think we could add language that maintenance is not redevelopment. Yeah. So if you're doing a slurry seal on your private parking lot, right, that should also is not a redevelopment. It's a maintenance.
I see that very important, Rob, because yeah, I see a lot of parking lots in this town that, you know, haven't been regularly maintained, and if they have onerous requirements in order to try and even do the most fundamental things like, you know, sealing their parking lots and things of this nature, I feel like people will try to stray away from doing ongoing maintenance to their properties. And that's always been a concern in this town for me personally, that some buildings are let to left go, you know, fairly raggedy, and, you know, and when they keep adding these, and trust me, I realize this isn't the city adding this. This was at the state level and came down through that. But I just want to make sure in the mind that it's clear to people that they do have the ability to still do that. And I did read after the fact they allow you to put on a second-story addition without it. So that's a new roof, so I guess that may have answered the question per se, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I think we could be more explicit with re-roofs as being an exempt
okay,
project.
I appreciate
as a maintenance
it.
Item.
That's all I have.
Along the same lines as Stephen, this guide is for development, new development and new redevelopment, right? And you said the owners will be required to do this annual thing. What if the house, if the home changes hands, will the new owners of that house be required to come bring things up to this level?
Yes, and that's why the stormwater facility will be a recorded document. The maintenance manual and the facility itself will be part of the go with the deed of the land. So it will be the responsibility of any future owner to maintain and operate.
But
as long as
you're the current owner now, that's not under these regulations, does not have to bring it up.
Let me clarify that a little bit. If it's an existing home that you're not doing any work on, you never trigger the regulations. So just the fact of selling the home doesn't trigger the new development standards. So there's no retrofit to new stormwater upon sale. Well, we probably shouldn't say that out loud because somebody from the board might be listening and get a good idea. No, that wouldn't be triggered just because you sold your house. It would be only through redevelopment or development of new impervious surfaces.
This is a very serious subject to me. The water is so serious. It's been serious. I'm a native Californian. It's been my entire life. When I built my home in 1997, I had to pay $5,000 to get a plumber to put in 10 low-flow toilets in somebody else's house so that I could get a half a toilet, or half a bath. So I totally relate to this, but I'm trying to understand that what I had to pay for in 1997 was water usage and not storm water related. Now, we're hoping we're going to get some storms, but I was wondering if you were instituting things like that back in the 80s and 90s and things like that, weren't we always doing something along these lines? Is this just something that you've put to make a guide for everybody to put it in black and white, or has something like this always existed?
Well, stormwater has evolved over the past few years, especially in maybe not as quickly in California as other states. But when I was growing up as an engineer, the premise was to get the water off the property as quickly as possible, get it to the creek, the lake, the ocean. The emphasis was on flood control. So you would get rid of the water. And our regulations have evolved as the state makes changes and the federal government makes changes to comply with those. And we've had on the books since I started with the city, some requirements for detention, on-site detention to deal with smaller storms, basically drainage control, and some water quality issues. But those, in some cases, have become less stringent because of the thresholds for small projects. You don't have to do as much. You implement LID or low-impact development measures instead of doing an engineering design and constructing a little detention facility in every front yard. So things are a water quality feature in every front yard. So things have evolved over time, and this is the latest rendition of that evolution.
All right, I do have two questions, and I don't know if the stormwater management plan is the place to put this. Stephen kind of struck a chord when he was talking. We were talking about the various mitigation efforts going through in terms of plans, detention, retention. Is there a place, or is there another place that exists for incentives / exemptions for people who create artificial retention? Rainwater drain off on houses. And you had some examples and pictures. When we talk about new construction, do we foresee promoting any sort of retention plans?
Well, we promote it through regulation. You're required to do those sorts of features when you redevelop. Are you talking about for existing development?
Well, maybe a little bit of both. And I know that existing, this is for new construction, but especially I'm speaking of like rooftop runoff for houses smaller than 2,000 feet. If they put, you know, in the ground retention basins that catches rainwater, or if you put just ones that are, you know, put tubs underneath your downspouts.
So like rainwater harvesting,
yes,
type features. I think that'll be things that we will be looking at. We'll talk a little bit more about that on our next item. But we're going to have a special meeting, or try to schedule a special PWAB meeting where we're going to talk more about those retrofit and credit types of items.
Okay, then
in detail.
Maybe these ideas you should speak to them later. Then I'm okay. That's all the questions I had. So. And I think this was just for an informational, there is no nothing needed from the board for this.
No, we've captured your comments, and we'll make the clarification on the rooftops to the plan.
Okay. So with that said, we're going to go to C2 water status report. The recommendation is to receive report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board. I think everybody knows that on January 17th this year, Governor declared an emergency due to our drought conditions, and the fact that this is probably the lowest rainfall year that we've been gauging rain. I think if you look back at the kind of the historic record, it might not be the lowest or longest drought period, but it's amongst them. Additionally, on January 31st, county staff, who county is the general contractor for the state water project water, informed the subcontractors that the allocation for 2014 is 0%, and only stored water may be used to meet delivery request. So the city has approximately 3,073 acre feet of water stored in San Luis Reservoir. And San Luis Reservoir is the reservoir off of I-5 as you're going to Hollister, if you ever go that way. So it's not in San Luis Obispo County. That water is south of the Delta, so it's not subject to the 0% restriction, because that 0% is to protect endangered species and species of concern that are in the Delta, and withdraw that water does affect them. So the city has this water in storage, and up until a few days ago, the plan was to keep that water in storage and draw by water that will be coming from the Nacimiento project would be that way that exchange might work. But those that is an ever-evolving process. County staff is going to Sacramento, or they might be there now, to talk with the governor's office and Department of Corrections to make that happen. There has to be a small construction project to tie the two facilities together, and it doesn't exist right now. And that tie together would happen on prison property. So we're trying to get the state to fund that connection. I gave an update to council a couple of weeks ago. That's what this PowerPoint display is. That's in the package, and I talked about what our sources of water are. State Water Project is, for the last few years, has been the majority of our water supply. We also use groundwater, and I lump that together with brackish water reverse osmosis, because when we pump water from the Moro Valley, most of that water doesn't go directly into our water system. It's treated at our desal plant before it's fed into the system to remove nitrates. And then we blend a small amount of raw well water in the system as long as we can blend to keep below the nitrates. We can make fresh water from seawater. We have five saltwater wells along the Embarcadero that can feed the kind of the desal side of our desal plant to remove salt from that water and feed that to the distribution system. One of the wells has problems with iron fouling, so we probably don't want to use that well until we get an viable iron removal system in place. And then the other problem with those wells is, as I think I've mentioned before, we received a permit from the California Coastal Commission in the mid-90s with an expiration date on it, and with some guidance as how to make that permanent. The city back in the 90s failed to make that a permanent permit, so we're working on that now, and I think we are, I wouldn't say moments away from receiving a permit because it has to go to go to hearing, but we're very close with working in staff on receiving a permit. Conservation is a major source of water. We've seen that happen over the past few weeks since we sent our notice out to the residents. Our typical flow from the State Water Project is about 740 gallons a minute during this time of year. We saw a drop over 2 weeks down to 600 gallons a minute, so a significant reduction in water supply. And we need to make those reductions because it's very difficult to change the flow in the State Water Project to us. It takes about 24 hours to make that adjustment, and if we don't make that change, we overfill our tanks and we have water running down King Street, and we don't want that to happen on a routine basis. And then in the future, we know that reclaimed water will be a significant portion of our water supply. Just have to point out, you can't make reclaimed water without water into the system. I don't think we're going to do a closed loop here and continue to recycle that water endlessly. So we do need other sources of water, but reclaimed water will be a future water supply for Moro Bay. The state has, in 2010, Governor Schwarzenegger signed a bill into Senate Bill 918, I think it was, that directed California Department of Health Services to develop guidance documents, rules, and regulations by 2016, if it's technically feasible, to allow for direct potable use of reclaimed water. And that'll be a major step forward in the use of reclaimed water. Next page, I kind of went over what our state water is. We get a allocation, annual allocation is 13-13. We purchased a drought buffer of 2290 acre feet a year, and then we have the 3,000 acre feet in storage. On a more typical year, when there's a reduction in state water supply, you add our drought buffer together with our annual allocation, multiply it times a percentage, and that's how much state water we get. So anything above about a 36% allocation rain we got, but I think it's mostly affected by there is not as much pumping of that water out of the groundwater basin, which has increased stream flows. Morrow Valley wells, both those water supplies are high in nitrates, so require either blending or treatment prior to use. Talked about salt water. Conservation. Interesting to note that in 1970, which was our historic high year for water use, we're at about 193 gallons per person per day. Currently, we're at about 117, as of last year, gallons per person per day. And I think if you measured it today, we'd be less than that. We don't currently have numerical limits on through our conservation regulation. It's these regulations that were adopted back in the late 80s or early 90s are more BMP-driven, so it's do these types of things and you can save water. You know, limit your car washing, limit your irrigation, but we don't have numeric standards. But there is provisions in the current code that if it gets severe, council can implement numerical standards. Reclaimed water, again, our future water supply, our local coastal plan, when we did our water plan update in 94, we anticipated about 770 acre feet a year of reclaimed water from our plant to offset a local agricultural and landscape irrigation demands. Perhaps with direct potable reuse, that number could change. We're working on our new water reclamation facility, and I talked about earlier, we have a we will probably have a new marching orders to implement a project, get it operational within 5 years. And we're working with the state regulatory agencies, including the Coastal Commission and the Regional Board, and they're very supportive of a reclaimed water program. One of the issues with using reclaimed water is it's high in sodium chlorides. Salt is high. The treatment process adds that to it. The water softening process adds that to it. And I think in past meetings, I've basically touted how soft our water is. And when I actually looked at the data, it's still within the semi-hard range. It's in about 100 parts per million hardness. So it's for coastal Californias that use groundwater, it's fairly soft. But if you look on the EPA's scale, they still consider that hard water. So we don't have a prohibition against water softeners, but I think a lot of communities, as they go for reclaimed water projects, look to limit the amount of self-generating water softeners, promote the tank exchange water softeners, and then deal with that brine from that tank exchange program either through a dedicated pipeline or a different way to treat that water. The next slides go through our water conservation requirements. At the council meeting in first council meeting in February, we changed our water conservation status from moderately restricted to severely restricted. We have some requirements of that. Basically, use of water that results in gutter runoff is prohibited. You can't use water for cleaning driveways, patios, parking lots, unless it's necessary to the protect the public health. Washing cars, the use of a hose is prohibited. Use of bucket is permitted as long as you're not wasting water. We limit outdoor irrigation between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Irrigation and landscaping in gardens is, we have the odd-even approach, even numbers on Wednesdays and Sundays, odd on Tuesdays and Saturdays. On our docks and waterfronts, which is somewhat problematic for our fishing community, the use of fresh water to wash down boats and docks for other incidental purposes is prohibited. Any outdoor hoses need to have spring-loaded shutoff handles. Like I said, these conservation regulations are a bit dated, and I think we could, and we will probably talk about this in our special meeting, about water for firefighting capabilities. So they have a large cistern in their parking lot at the new fire station that takes roof runoff water and adds to it, and it was put there for irrigating their landscaping, but also for pump testing. And they've been able to use that for some training operations where some of their equipment they can't use there. So they would coordinate with our parks department to basically spray water in lieu of parks doing some irrigation. So our fire department is very concerned about the water supply, and we're going to be working with them on getting them a non-potable source of water that both they and Cal Fire can share for filling up a water tender if need be, so they don't need to use potable water for that. That concludes my staff report, and we have a following an agenda item that we'll be discussing on scheduling that special meeting, and I'd be happy to answer any questions at this point.
Okay, with that, about the water supply update, right? Question, okay. Do we have any questions? We'll start down here, Ron. Do you have any?
Very good. Thank you very much. I'm done.
I told my husband that showering with a bucket would make a difference. But I also called out my landscaper and asked him what it would cost me to remove my lawn. And he said, you know, you might want to hold off on that because, you know, Grover and Pismo, they're all, the city's contributing to having lawns removed. And I said, oh, well, maybe I ought to ask if Morro Bay's thinking about something like that, because it's very expensive.
I think that's an item we'll be talking about at the next meeting, those new kind of conservation and retrofit ideas that weren't thought of maybe in the early 90s that other cities are doing. And it's not just Grover and Pismo. It's Paso, Templeton, and Atascadero all have similar programs for turf removal and rewarding you for that turf removal.
Residential allocations are going to be, you said, will be on a first-come, first-served basis. How do you know when you're out of water? I mean, if I wanted to build a new house here in Morro Bay, how long would I have to wait? Or how do I get can I still get a permit for water at a new place?
City Council, at their last meeting, they allocated our typical 115 WEUs without any restriction.
Okay.
But they asked that item to come back to City Council after the special PWEU. Because our current retrofit policy is a bit antiquated. When Deborah was talking about buying the 10 toilets to get a WEU, now we're talking about having to buy 140 toilets to get that same WEU. That's about $30,000 to get a WEU. If you use the same logic that replacing toilets are the best method to for that retrofit. It's because we've done a great job of both through the required retrofit program back a few years ago and our voluntary retrofit program that we have right now that we actually compensate people for changing out their toilets. There's not many high-flow toilets, if any, left in Morro Bay. Most of them are the 1.6 gallon per flush. Well, the new standard is 1.28 gallons per flush. You're not saving that large amount per flush anymore, and so it adds up the number of toilets that have to be to almost an unfeasible number to have to retrofit. That's why council wanted to talk about other ideas like the turf reduction program. That might be a component of the retrofit. So if just give an example would be of, you know, the city goes back to that you have to have basically retrofit enough things to get your WEU. Well, toilets probably doesn't do it, but waterless urinals save a lot of water in commercial buildings. Lawn removal also saves a lot more water than changing a 1.6 gallon per flush to a 1.28 gallon per flush. So those are the kinds of things we'll be talking about at our special meeting.
Do you have anything more? Oh, I'll go ahead. You broke down how many WEUs were put out over, you know, different years in your report.
Yeah.
Is it like a number of fixture units? Is it a
one WEU is 1,078 cubic feet, or basically the average water use for a single family home for a year.
Oh, okay. But can a home have more than one WEU needed if they're building a McMansion opposed to
a
600 square foot?
A single family home, be it 600 square feet or 6,000 square feet, is a WEU.
And the condos treated the same way.
Yeah, generally, the amount of bathrooms don't relate to the amount of water usage because. Some might argue that fewer people live in bigger houses.
That's very true, although with condos, I see a much less water usage because they usually have a common landscape meter.
So condos have a little bit less.
Oh, so they don't do a 1 WEU
in
a
condo? No, and then we have a big table in our ordinance about where fraction, you know, we have how much per seat in a restaurant a WEU is.
Oh, okay.
I don't have those numbers with me.
So that's why the condos had a lower allocation.
Correct.
Because it doesn't take as – it may be the same number of units as single family, but it's just – okay, I follow you now. And the other question I had, do you actually have any projects – I saw recently Governor Brown talking about throwing a ton of money at both water conservation, new projects. Does the city have anything in the works right now? I hate to use the term shovel ready, but it seems to be the one they always speak to. In the works that maybe some grant funding may be involved in that.
We have the second phase for our desal plant, but that's already been grant funded for that project, and I don't know that we can double dip on that and ask for more grant funding, but we may give it a shot. That would be probably the closest that we have to shovel ready. I don't think this funding would be available for example, our Nutmeg tank replacement project. It doesn't really
add to the
water conservation or add to the supply. It does give us a little bit more storage, but most of that storage is necessary for fire flow requirements because we can't meet our fire flow in that zone.
And my last thing, it's not really a question. It's more, I guess, a little bit of my opinion on as this goes to city council. And you spoke a little bit about using the stored water that's up in San Luis Reservoir. My feelings are the wells we have here in town and the sea trains you have set up to desalinate the waters coming through those wells, I think we should at least try to make every effort to use as much of the groundwater as we can under our existing permits. You know, I realize there's certain flow rates and you can't pump and things of that nature, but I honestly feel that's where we should be trying to maximize, if that's the best word, going forward in this drought. Because you talk to about a three-year drought. Well, 3 years you can meet the needs from the stored water, and there may be concerns getting the water down here. If all goes well, that's great. But who knows? Could be 5 years. Or you lost your complete store as a result of going through this drought. Not, like I said, it's not a question. It's purely a statement that, in my humble opinion, I think we should be doing everything we can to try and maximize the wells we presently have here in town under your operating permits. Thank you.
Just one question. I noticed on one of the slides you were talking about the cost of reclaiming water, and you didn't really talk about the question really concerns the cost of reclaiming water. I noticed that that was on the slide, that obviously that's an issue, what it costs to reclaim water.
Yes.
And I understand that the facility we're building, at least it sounds like at the present time, we aren't talking about really incorporating water reclamation initially. Is that true or not?
I think it might be a bit premature to say that. Current direction from council is to have a reclamation-ready facility, tertiary treatment. I think it depends on, as we move forward, and especially for the agricultural customers, if we have known customer base and we can get it to them relatively easily, I think it'll drive that reclamation project. So it'll be kind of a market-driven project. And quite frankly, I think the changes in regulations as we move forward, if come out of the, make it easy for people to not have to flush their unused pharmaceuticals and to either take them back to the pharmacy or our existing, I'll promote our existing take-back program at our police department. You can bring unused pharmaceutical drugs there and drop them off there for appropriate destruction.
Well, it sounds like you've done a lot of research and you're on top of the issue, which is important. Thank you.
And I have a question to end this item. Is being the canary in the coal mine, as we're talking about all of this, and if we do have to reroute our water from San Luis Reservoir to the various water sources in our county, be it Lopez, whatnot, and build that ultimate pipeline, how close do you think we are to getting that? What happens? How prepared are we to use our desal plant and our brackish water plants full time without getting outside water sources?
Physically, we could use them right tonight. I could have staff report back into the city and turn them on. We used them during our state water shutdown. Now, we don't have a permit from Coastal to use them, so we're actually violating the Coastal Act by doing that. We inform Coastal Commission that we are, when we do run the desal plant, so that they know. That is not one of their highest priorities for enforcement when we're delivering potable water to a community, and we are currently working with them on to finalize that permit. But physically, there's nothing stopping us from providing water through that facility.
At a sufficient rate that would cover the city's needs?
I think we would still need to conserve water.
No, definitely. I mean, if we're down to 600 gallons per minute.
Yeah.
And if we got that somewhat lower, but those trains would be sufficient?
Between both the brackish water and the saltwater trains, we could supply the city's need under conservation, under what levels we're using it right now. I don't think we can go back, you know, back to using water at the 193 gallons per person per day, but I don't know that anybody really wants to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Could I ask? I was just going to ask a follow-up question. How much more costly would that be if we had to rely on the desal plant?
Well, the desal plant running the saltwater trains is about the same as state water. But as long as we're on the state water system, we're paying for state water, the debt service on the state water pipeline, whether we get a drop of state water or not. So about $1,500 an acre foot of our $1,600 an acre foot state water bill-ish is for debt service. So that's for the our buy-in to the big system, and then the construction costs for the coastal branch of the state water project, the pump stations at Paleno Pass, the treatment plant at Devil's Den, the pipeline that carries it over here, our share of that.
I'm good,
actually. Okay. Do we have any other questions? No? Go ahead, Ron.
Well, my question is, do you have an idea of the special meeting? I guess we're at that point.
I think, well, if that closes item C2, I do, and if our questions are done, and we received the report. So thank you, Rob. We do move on to C3. So we just finished C2. No, that's totally fine.
You were perfect timing.
Yep, your anticipatory set. Rob was just sitting there like a good teacher.
So there's no real staff report for C3. What we're looking for to schedule a special meeting, and I contacted Parks and Recreation for the availability of the Vets Hall, because we're anticipating there might be a few more people in the audience for that special meeting, so we want to hold it here. And unfortunately, given that Council wants us to hold this in March to bring something back to them early April, we have two dates that we can choose from, March 12th or March 26th. Both are Wednesdays?
Both are good.
12th is better for me.
Go ahead, Rob.
It would be standard time, so 6 p.m.
Either one.
The 12th or the 26th?
So it looks like we're open either day, both, and I'm fine also, and the 12th
okay.
or the 26th.
So we'll work with Rec and Parks and schedule that meeting and send out a notice to the board.
Okay, that's great. Perfect. And so C3 will just be suspended, and that's our first future agenda item. Do we have any idea for our April meeting besides the Citizen Bike Committee? What else might be coming?
I'll give the board an update on what we're doing at Radcliffe in Maine, because we had a meeting there. We talked about doing some specific items, and it's not agendized tonight, but I will bring that back with what the plan, what can be done there, what can't be done there, and work on that. I can follow up on some general traffic issues from Ms. Bass comments too. So maybe I'll just have a general traffic item where we can talk, you know, traffic for hours or so.
Okay, well, that begs the question then. So what we're going to talk about Radcliffe in Maine at our next scheduled meeting. Right here, looking at our adjournment and our next meeting is May. Is there a reason that we're going in? I know, but here. Okay. Is that a misprint?
I think that is a misprint
okay.
because we would generally go to April.
Yes, I know, and that's why I'm asking.
Meeting, so.
Okay, so our next our meeting is adjourned. Our next meeting is the third Thursday in April, and at that meeting we're going to be talking about Radcliffe in Maine and Citizen Bike Committee. So far there might be other items on the agenda. And with that, I don't think we have anything further, and so we'll see everybody in April. Thank you, Marvin.
Actually, March 12th will be your special meeting.
Okay, so our next regular scheduled meeting is in April. We will have a special meeting in March. Okay, thanks a lot, and you guys have a good night.
No, I just
said,
I have a
about it, so.